Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron, and in the studio I've got Robs. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're here to talk Nature Connection. And have you been? Where have you been? You've been away.
Every holidays tends to be down Nelson Way that I head, because my parents are down there and they're getting a bit older. But man, I love the South Island, so
yeah,
I'm pretty happy about that.
More forest in the South Island?
Yeah, it's so different. So you know, you kind of head south from Nelson towards the lakes, and you got some beach forest, and then you know you head north into the Kaharangis.
Yeah.
You just got quite a few options down there.
Yeah.
And it's huge, you know.
And you do, like, often when you've been down there, I know you have an experience where you go into the forest for a night or overnight experience or a 2-day experience or something like that. So did you do that this time?
I did. Yeah, every time I'm down there, make the most of the grandparents, hanging out with my boy Matai, and then I'll disappear for a couple of days. Yeah, and this time I got my parents to choose. It's like,
choose a place.
Just send me somewhere. Just drop me somewhere. Or send me somewhere, and I'll figure it out. The rest. Just up the road from where they live is a valley called the Maitai Valley, and at the top of that valley is the reservoir, which you know provides the water for Nelson. And then behind that is days and days of wilderness. Almost to the bottom of the South Island, really. It kind of all connects in.
Actually,
Nelson Lakes and beyond, and then Hunter Springs, and then you know.
If you do it right, I think you get to the bottom of the South Island. There'd only be three roads to cross: Lewis Pass, Haast Pass, and Arthur's Pass.
So cool. It was in that bush there, which I got dropped, and it's a pretty challenging place. Have to say.
So you didn't have a car to escape to?
No. It was an interesting trip, this one. As you'll find out at the end of the story, I'll tell you why it was interesting for me. I don't know whether it's because I'm getting old or because I'm getting wise or both of those things. but definitely a few new teachings for me from this trip.
Can we just say what you had in the way of resources?
I just had a knife.
Okay, and you were wearing clothes.
Yeah, I was wearing clothes.
Did you have a warm jacket?
Nah, nothing fancy. Just a pair of trousers and just a hoodie.
Okay,
no waterproofs. No, I don't really do that. Like, it's going to be cold. I need to wear this and this. I guess I used to do that a bit, but these days, just I try and keep it as normal as it can. Just with, you know, a t-shirt and a hoodie and a pair of jeans.
And
bare feet.
Okay.
Yeah. Bare feet, I mean, you don't always have to go bare feet. And kind of depending on the terrain, it's not always a good idea to go bare feet. But there is reasons for going bare feet. And when I'm doing my bush time, it really is a meditation. And it's about sort of quietening my own mind and my own being down. Which allows me to receive the information around me, whether that's, you know, the species of plants and the lay of the land and animal tracks and animal signs and the clouds, and there's just so much. And having bare feet, it just gives me a ton more information than having shoes on.
This is similar to what I was just talking about with Lani with the sophrology chat. We were talking about getting out of your head.
Mm.
And basically that's what you're doing.
Go into the animal mindset, where you're just... It's just an awareness and a responsiveness to the environment around you.
Yeah.
So, not a ton of thought. And I guess as you spend more time in such an environment and such a headspace, you totally just turn into an animal.
Less analysis, I think, because your brain is still operating, but it's not...
It's not
all about what's happening inside the head.
I mean, you can't really afford to just sort of sit and dwell on things. You have to, because the stakes are high. You know, I'm always sort of saying that the stakes are quite high because there is a lot of discomfort, or the potential for a lot of discomfort and hardship ahead of you, which, you know, I've passed through a lot, and that's been part of my journey to experience that and then learn from that. And then ultimately in time and with experience, the hardship decreases and the comfort and magicalness sort of increases as you sort of become more skilled and familiar.
Can we put a disclaimer in here and say, just because you've done this, we're not recommending that all our listeners immediately head out to the bush with a knife and day clothes.
You don't need to do that. It's part of my journey because of, you know, I guess my calling in life is to really explore and experience as much as I can and have as much of a story as I can, because of, you know, I feel my role is to support other people, not necessarily at that level of going into the bush with nothing, but wherever they're at, it just gives me a huge scope to meet people where they're at and, you know, be able to share everything that I've experienced for their benefit as well.
But you will take people into the bush, like a one or two people for this,
you know,
kind of
definitely
experience.
There's people that that's going to call, and that's going to be a powerful experience for them.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And I'm there for, you know, to support people, like I said, where they're at, whether it's, you know, your own backyard, your own garden in town, and how you can kind of connect with that environment, or whether it's going deep into the wilderness with nothing and, you know, taking it to the other side of that spectrum.
Yeah. All right, so back to Nelson.
Back to Nelson. I'll set the scene. We've been kind of wet up here, but down there apparently it was almost drought. It hadn't really rained for 4 or 5 weeks. And however, upon my arrival, I brought the rain, and it rained for 3 days.
Oh, wow.
And the day after the rain stopped is the day that I went in the bush.
Okay.
Not that I was waiting for the rain to stop. It's just, you know, I have to sort of navigate what works best for everyone in that timetable. And that was the day that worked. So off I went. It's nice and sunny, and the sun was kind of warm. But once I got in the bush, it was absolutely... I looked like I'd just come out of a shower. Every branch was just sodden with water drops. Any tree or bush that I brushed past would absolutely soak me. It was boggy as underfoot.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yes.
I mean, I don't actually know if I've ever been in a damper place ever in all my bush time that I've ever done.
Without actually being physically underwater.
Yeah, it was quite remarkable. Beautiful, but obviously, like, hugely challenging. I knew it was going to be cold, you know, when the rains stop, the wind generally takes a southerly approach. You know, usually bringing the cooler winds with them, the cooler air with them. So I knew it was going to be a cold night ahead of me.
This is a couple of weeks ago.
3 weeks ago.
I guess. For people wondering,
And, I mean, it was a challenging environment. It's kind of a fair bit of beach forest there already because I was actually getting quite high up, quite rocky. Not a lot of the species which I kind of look to for safety that we get around here. You know, not so much mahui or the plants which are really useful for making fire. So I had to be quite, you know, improvise quite a lot with that to try. No straight spindles anywhere, so a hand drill fire, which is, I guess, the more simplistic approach, wasn't going to be an option. Excuse me. So I tried to make a bow drill set, and even bow drill is a type of friction fire where instead of rubbing a stick between your hands to get the spin and the speed and the pressure, and thus the friction, you make a little bow out of a bent piece of wood. So it's more mechanical, so less muscle, you know.
Yeah.
It's like a machine, basically.
Is it a bit faster?
Yeah, faster. And just, if you do a hand drill, you kind of got a time limit before your skin starts to break.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of friction on your hands as well.
Yeah.
Whereas a bow drill, there's not really any time limit because it's really gentle on your body.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, just going into that, there's probably 5 or 6 different fire techniques, and it's kind of good to learn them all and become proficient in them all, because different environments, you know, offer different resources, and then you can find one which matches, which is probably the reason why certain tribes around New Zealand had different techniques to make fire.
Yeah,
in different places, you know, it makes sense. So I managed to find some kanuka, in a hillside, which I think must have had a fire a while back, and made bow drill set number one, and gave that a blast to no avail. So I'm just always listening, you know. It's never a, oh, failed. It's never like a, you know, I'm just there to experience what I'm meant to experience, and whatever I do experience is there to teach me. So, you know, it kind of excites me sometimes when things don't work, because it allows me to grow. So I kind of listened to that and then made another set, and it took me 4 bow drill sets into the dark of the night.
Yes.
Trying, learning, you know, honing my technique. But as it got darker and darker, the air got more and more moist.
Yeah.
You know, as happens when air gets colder, it can't hold the water, and then you get all of that moisture. And then it just kind of got to the stage where it was pretty much going to be not impossible at all, but beyond my abilities. And being worthwhile, because obviously I'm putting energy into doing that, and then if I use all my energy and then at the end of that I don't have an ember, then I'm already a wreck, and I've still got another 10-11 hours of cold night to navigate, and then you know, that's not the best situation to be in. So I've learned from past experiences when to call it, you know, before you get to that stage. And then option B is I've just got to keep my body moving until sun comes up and shines on me and keeps me warm.
That's also tiring.
It is tiring. But I guess that's part of the teaching of that experience, is how to move and how to navigate and that stillness and that connection. You know, if you're going too fast, one, you're using energy you don't need to use. You just want to go just fast enough to keep that temperature at a comfortable level, and really just, you know, quiet in your mind and really be as meditative as you possibly can, so as to really you know, not use as much energy, not waste any energy at all.
Well, the brain does use energy.
Huge amount of energy.
So
just finding that stillness and that kind of state of bliss. And I don't actually like walking. And
You're not a tramper. You don't go into the bush to tramp.
Not at all, no. Yeah. I've never really enjoyed doing that. You know, I've never actually, you know, in all my life, I've never tramped into the bush and stayed in a hut. I've never ever done that. I haven't done any of the, very few actually tracks that I've actually walked on in New Zealand. It's never really been a passion or an interest to do that. However,
to keep warm,
being forced, knowing that, well, I have to walk tonight, you know, it's not an option not to walk. I have to walk, so you know, it just takes away that, oh, I'm not enjoying this, because I can't. It's not about enjoying it. It's just I have to do it. So then, knowing that I've got 10 hours or 11 hours in front of me in this beautiful, very dark but very beautiful environment to do anything, you know, I'm off track. I don't know where the closest track is to me. It's just me and the wilderness and the stars and this 10 hours and, you know, you feel so free. You can, you know, see the silhouette of mountains around you, all the way around you, 360 degrees, and you can just point to a place and you go, I'm going there, you know, and off you go. Like, it's such a freedom. You're not limited to anything at all, because you're not on a track. You're just navigating the landscape. So I love it. I love it so much. So it's not something that you want to do every night, because it is, you know, it's a huge challenge, but once you kind of accept it, which you have to, you just really get into it, and it's such a beautiful, beautiful way to experience the wilderness without, you know, largely without your eyes.
And obviously, for people wondering, you have the ability to find your way around in the bush. You don't get lost like most of us would.
I mean, the concept of being lost is it's all but disappeared for me, really. You know, I'm not even trying to keep track of where I am. And I'm there, because I kind of know that it's not going to be too tricky. You know, I'm not going to go miles and miles and miles away.
Yeah.
And there's certain ridges and there's landmarks, and, you know, I kind of know generally which way Nelson's going to be. And
I don't
really need to worry so much now. But obviously, you know, again, disclaimer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you've lots of experience.
Lust is more of a mindset, and it's quite easy for someone who isn't as at home in the bush to experience that panic of being lost, and it's not a nice place to be. And it can happen anywhere, you know. You don't need to be in this infinite wilderness at all. You can be in a very small area and still feel lost, still be in that mindset. So beware, people.
So did you just walk nonstop all night?
Now, what happens is, especially if you're going uphill, and I started off in the valley, so I did a fair bit of uphill, you generate quite a bit of body heat going uphill, and you never want to sweat, because sweat, you know, you've got moisture and that just takes a lot of your temperature, and then your body's working a lot harder to replace that heat, and it gets a lot harder, so you really want to find that perfect balance. So when you get an amount of body heat, it does allow you, that will keep you warm for sort of, even in a frost, that will keep you warm for sort of 15, 20 minutes, comfortably warm.
Okay.
And there's some of the best moments is if you can find, obviously, like there's nowhere that the ground is dry to lie on, but there is quite rocky.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, I might find in a large, flat enough rock that I can lie down on.
Yeah.
And yeah, just rest, deep rest. And I'm warm, I've got nothing on me, I'm just warm, and the stars are there, and as I say, the silhouette of the mountains and the song of the river down in the valley, and to just be in that place is like sings to my heart so much. And then you get cold, 15-20 minutes, you feel the cold coming back in, so up you get and off you go, and you know, 20 seconds you're warm again if you're going uphill. And if you want to, you can walk for a minute and rest for another 20 minutes and, you know, navigate. So it's totally free, total freedom, you know. It's up to you within the, you know, the restraints of keeping yourself safe. And
I know and well. You, yeah, Rob's took a group of us up Karioi around about this time last year, actually. And it was a really nice night. There was no wind, which is great because it could be quite windy up there. But we did that thing of having rest every now and again.
Mm.
And it's a stark contrast to what I'm wired. I have now become wired to do, probably by my culture, which is the goal is to get to the top, and we do it as quickly as we can. And you get to the top, and you're really tired because you just haven't paced yourself or anything. Like that seems to be the way that somehow I've been taught to do everything, to keep going till it's done.
Yeah.
And obviously that's not healthy. Again, this harks back to the sophrology discussion with Lani, that like what's actually healthy for us as human beings. And in your situation, you're talking about a situation where if you screw up, it's potentially life-threatening, but you're experienced and you're focused on the right things. So you're not focused. And of course, you're walking to keep warm. You're not walking to achieve a goal of getting to a certain spot.
Mm.
So I guess that's gone. That's not there anyway. Even if you had that tendency, you wouldn't have it in that situation.
Yeah, literally, it's just a moment-to-moment thing, you know. Nothing else matters.
Yeah.
It's where you are and what you're feeling in that moment and, you know, responding to that on your environment and what your own personal needs are in that moment.
And how does it feel when you first see the bit of light coming back?
Magical. The birds start singing and you know why, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like no doubt a night in the wilderness for any animal isn't an easy thing, you know, especially when it's super cold. And, you know, they have the energy and they have the bodies to generally, you know, some birds do die in the night or some animals do die from the cold in the night, but generally they've got a rhythm and a body that can get them through. But that's not to say as soon as that first light comes and, you know, warmth and the sun is on its way, the sun becomes such a blessing, you know, such a sacred special gift that you feel so grateful for. And when you feel it on your skin, I mean, we know it's nice to feel the sun on your skin, but it just takes that to a different level when it means so much more.
But if you were in the bush, in the forest, could you actually see the sun? Or you were shaded?
It took a while, yeah. I mean, I guess the sun came up about 7 or so, 6:37. But I think by the time that I actually got it on my skin, got to find a spot where I could actually lie and you know, bathe in the sun, probably more like 9:30. So I got that. But yeah, it was It was magical when it came. And then I could rest, you know. Then all that hard work's done, I'm fine, I feel good. You know, it's been a beautiful night, but I'm pretty exhausted. A big factor in this actual story was the fact that I hadn't eaten for sort of 24 hours.
Oh.
So not only am I using this energy, as little as possible, but obviously I am using energy and keeping myself warm and moving, but I'm not putting any energy in. And my plan was that I'd stay out another night from there.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of go further up the valley. But because I was kind of getting further and further away from civilization, you know, I didn't have any reception to call for help. I didn't have any food, so I was kind of going to be getting weaker and weaker. And the direction that I was going to head would probably have been sort of up the valley, so yeah, uphill, which... So all of those things, I figured, well, you know, things could go wrong. You know, there's a potential for things to go wrong, which I know I'm saying that's going to teach me a ton of things as well. But, you know, there's
it
always,
might teach you how to die.
There's always a limit on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a line. It's just not necessary for me to cross at all. You know, there's always next time. So I think in a way... You know, whilst for the last 10 years I've been going very minimal into the bush, if I did pack a little bag which had a flint strike and a chocolate bar and an emergency blanket or something, you know, I could have probably done that second night even if I didn't use them.
Yeah.
It would have just given me that extra bit of security. Which is funny that it took me 10 years to figure that out. Maybe it's a sort of bit of stoicism that I need to let go of.
You're trying to prove something by going in there with just a knife.
For me, it's a feeling, you know, just like walking empty, like pretty empty-handed.
Yeah.
You know, if I've got a backpack on, it's not at all the same. You know, it makes you sweat more for a start, and it snags on branches when you're climbing under them. So just that real sense of freedom I get from just me and the wild is, I think, what I love. But I think at this stage in my life, it's becoming probably worthwhile for me to just put a couple of things in my pockets.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
To be able to be out there potentially a bit longer, and, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm there to, like I say, whatever experience I'm going to experience, and any experience can teach me stuff.
But you obviously know reasonably well where your limits are, certainly better than I do, most of us do.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a situation where you've had hypothermia or got close to hypothermia or something, so you know what that's like?
Not even close. I mean, I've been...
It's very exhausting.
You know, I wonder... So back in, you know, instead of going to university at 18, you know, my university was going pretty hard out, doing a lot of meditating.
Yeah.
Know, kind of living like a monk and just going hard, meditating hours every day and, you know, really connecting with myself and sort of understanding myself. And part of that was working with, you know, the sensations and the feelings within the body and, you know, such a feeling as cold. And so I guess from that age, I had a different relationship with cold. You know, it's not just, oh, I'm feeling cold, I don't like it, I want to be warm, you know, let's stop it. It was, oh, let's see what this actually feels like. What is cold, you know? And you kind of feel the vibration of cold and you feel the waves of it. And, you know, I'm practicing this now when I'm in the night. You know, it's never a warm night in the bush, even by a fire. You know, it's temporarily warm until it dies down a bit and then you're cold and wake up and then you have to tend it again. And, yeah, it comes in waves, cold. And, you know, one moment, you might be struggling and suffering from cold, and 5 seconds later, you have no awareness of being cold at all, and your mind's like in a dream somewhere. And then the waves come and the waves go and the waves come and the waves go. So, you know, I don't really want to put it to the test and see if I get hypothermia or not. But yeah. I do. I'm curious to know as how much of hypothermia is from the energy, the mental energy that you, if you're calm and you're just meditating through the night, whether those waves would just come and go until dawn, or
Theoretically, we have, still have a lot of resources in our body. Mm. We've still got, like, there is enough. I don't, well, no, I'm no expert at all, so I really don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm wondering about, we've got, obviously we've got fat stores, and we, our body can consume our muscle, if in some circumstances, is what I sort of understand. Like, so you've got, you've got resources to keep warm.
I mean, I've been observing these four horses that live in a paddock right next to me, which, you know, and I'm watching them a lot, and it's obviously been real frosty. Hard frost. I live in Waitatuna in the valley. So some pretty hard frost this week, and I'm watching these horses and what they do at night. Because they don't shed a lot of fur, horses, you know. Their winter coat, and, as you know, I'm not a horse expert, but they don't seem to go all fluffy and woolly too much in winter. So I'm watching how they navigate the night, and basically they don't move at all. They stand and don't even seem to move, you know, any muscle really. It's like they're meditating the whole night, and I don't think they're necessarily like loving the cold nights, but I think they just know how to get through it. And again, the sun comes up in the warmth, and like I do by sort of 8:39, I'm seeing them actually lay down in the sun and just soak it in and shut their eyes and, you know, catch up on the rest that they didn't get at the night because it was a bit too cold. So, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if that's just one of the ways that animals, you know, basically meditate.
Hey, we're sort of out of, we're definitely out of time, but you had a plan, a two-day plan, and someone was going to pick you up at the end of that 2 days. So how did you get home?
I called it. I had a bit of a rest in the sunshine and thought, oh, yeah, that's not worth it. So I just wandered out and wandered halfway to Nelson before a car picked me up and gave me a ride back
down
the valley.
You must have looked a bit bedraggled by the end of that, like quite damp.
I don't think I was too bad.
I'm just curious about people's reactions, like, because you're not, you're wearing bare feet.
It was a school teacher that picked me up.
Did you explain what you'd been doing?
She was kind of curious, but I don't. She kept reverting to man versus wild.
that's what she thought you were doing.
I don't think is a fair sort of comparison to what I'm doing.
You're man with wild,
yeah,
not versus.
Nice, Aaron.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that's a better man with line. Wild. Yeah. All right, Robs. Look, thank you for coming in. Interesting story. Not what I thought this was going to be like a 2-minute thing, and then we get on to the other topic of weather.
Yeah,
but
that's all
this,
right.
This is about weather, though.
Yeah,
isn't it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was about weather. Yeah. And I did the same for sophrology. Where do people go to find out about what you do?
Kudatayo.com. Or if you're on Facebook, we've got a pretty active Facebook page with different challenges and bits of information and articles and things which I'm posting.
Akura, KURATAIAO.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.